From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, government reform activists bring smartphones to the Assembly Committee meetings as part of Sunshine Week. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the failure of the DREAM Act in the state Senate, and a new report finds major safety lapses at Metro North Railroad. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Government reform activists took their smartphones into Assembly Committee meetings this week to live stream meetings that so far have not been available online to the public. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt explains.
To mark what's known as Sunshine Week to promote more open government, the activists took their smartphones into several Assembly Committee meetings. Using simple software, they pressed record and streamed the proceedings live on the Internet. Alex Camarda says it's the first time ever the meetings have been available online.
The Assembly has actually 84 different entities, 37 committees, 27 subcommittees, task forces, commissions, none of which regularly webcast or make available their proceedings to the public unless you show up in person. And some of them have never done that.
The picture is handheld and the sound is a bit muddy, but the recordings reveal several key points. One is that most of the meetings are brief, lasting about 5 minutes or less, and not much happens.
1618A, Mr. Gant. Motion to report. Negative votes.
Majority Party Democrats methodically work their way through legislation sponsored by Democrats. They're interrupted only by questions from Minority Party Republicans. The Democrats answer with somewhat strained patience. The GOP lawmakers then almost routinely vote as a block against all of the bills.
All minority?
Minority in the negative.
A few lawmakers seem more focused on their BlackBerries and iPhones than on the proceedings. At the Assembly Environmental Conservation Committee meeting, the first several minutes of the recording featured lawmakers eating as they eagerly reach for a large platter of sandwiches and crack open sodas. In an indication that the lawmakers knew they're being recorded, a sign on the food makes clear that the spread was not paid for by the taxpayers' money. A staff member for Committee Chair Robert Sweeney later confirmed that the assemblyman pays for the lunch, since the meeting is almost always held at noontime. And the chair of the Small Business Committee, William Scarborough, went out of his way to acknowledge the live streamers.
We will be joined by the Citizens Union here. They are filming various committee meetings, and they've come to film our meeting. So, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bill Mahoney with the New York Public Interest Research Group was one of those recording the meetings. He says it costs next to nothing, and he believes just having the cameras there can improve the quality of the meetings.
It's like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. You can't view something without changing how that body behaves. And so maybe if legislators know that their members, that their constituents are actually watching at home and have a chance to see if they're debating or if they're just sitting there raising their hand on occasion and walking out as soon as the meeting ends, maybe these legislators will engage in more debate and they'll start marking up bills in committees and taking the other actions that will make our committee process a lot more functional.
The state Senate has been live streaming their committee meetings for the past couple of years now. A stationary camera is positioned several feet away from the lawmakers, and highlights chosen by the senators appear on the Senate website. A spokesman for the Assembly says Democrats are currently discussing whether or not to adopt routine live streaming of their public meetings. The activists hope their recordings will help the Assembly decide faster. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, we're in a week when we've seen the defeat in the Senate of something called the DREAM Act.
You know, in New York, there was an effort in the Assembly to begin with to create what's called the DREAM Act, meaning if the children who were brought here without any knowledge, or I mean, they didn't make up their minds, were in college, that they could qualify for the same financial benefits that other children could. This comes on the heels, David, of the governor proposing to the Black and Hispanic caucus that people in prison could qualify for free tuition, for college tuition. And that was soundly defeated because it turned out that a lot of people said, well, I'm struggling to pay this an immense amount of money, and I can't find this for my own children, and we're going to do prisoners for free. I thought it was a good idea, and I thought it was a gutsy idea on the governor's part to do it because recidivism is alarmingly high, and you know, if you, the more education you get, the better your chances are of beating all of this. In any case, the DREAM Act that is proposed by the Assembly goes down in the Senate, and it gets very, very complicated. You need 32 votes to pass a bill. There are a couple of vacancies. The Democrats didn't have enough people. Jeff Klein, who runs the Independent Conference of Democrats, some people call them collaborationists with the Republicans, he voted to do the DREAM Act. But did he know that they didn't have the votes? Did the governor know that they didn't have the votes? Did the Senate know that they didn't have the votes, the Senate Republicans? And at what point did the Republicans learn the lesson that was learned in the presidential election, that if you're going to say to the Hispanic community in the United States that you can't have a DREAM Act, that you can't have your kids being educated, at what point do they stop voting for you?
Meantime, we have the specter of April 1st and whether we'll have an on-time budget. You spoke to Blair Horner this week. He's the legislative director of NYPERG. Something in the governor's arsenal in that he can put out the extender if it doesn't come to an agreement.
Right. If they don't come up with a budget on time, there can be something called an extender. The governor then controls everything. They don't want that to happen, says Blair Horner. I also talked to Denny Farrell, who's the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, and he made it quite clear that the deal was in, that there would be a budget on time, and he didn't sound like there was any question about that whatsoever. You know, David, it's interesting. One of the symbols of Albany's dysfunction has always been that there wasn't an on-time budget. And now we get the budget coming in on time, to which I say, big deal. You know, I mean, they get a budget on time. What, are we supposed to applaud and say, oh, well, now everything's fixed in Albany? We know it isn't fixed, but we know that they finally learned that people hated it when they didn't get a budget on time. They made fun of them, so they get a budget on time. What's in the budget is more important than the on time.
Rob Astorino, the Westchester County executive, made some moves this week, including appearing over the past weekend in Saratoga, where he said that one of his main moves, if he became governor, would be to repeal the SAFE Act. What do you make of Astorino's first initial statement?
Well, you got to work with what you got. And Astorino knows that Cuomo took a real hit upstate New York from the gun guys. They're the gun owners. Many people own guns in this country, and certainly in upstate New York, this is a way of life. So he knows that, you know, there is a large group of people who didn't like the fact that the governor shoved this gun issue through the legislature, the SAFE Act. And I have to tell you, I thought the governor was gutsy, and it was a real profile in his courage that he did it. Nevertheless, as I say, you work with what you got. Astorino, who is going to be outgunned, outmoneyed, out everything in this election, has got to see what points of access he has to voters. And clearly, he has chosen the gun issue as one.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Thank you. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. At a stop in Johnstown this week, two New York congressmen visited with farmers and other members of the Southern Adirondack community to discuss ways to aid rural communities in the state. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there and filed this report.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture hosted a New York Rural Roundtable Summit at Fulton Montgomery Community College. The first of three to be held in eastern New York, the summit brought together small business owners, farmers, and other community advocates to give participants a chance to learn about government programs and grants and other opportunities available to help strengthen rural communities. Lee Talega, New York State Director for USDA Rural Development, said the roundtables aim to spread information on a variety of programs to those in less accessible areas.
Urban centers, it's easy. You have a lot of activity going on. In your smaller communities, you have to really talk about economic development in a whole host of areas.
The event featured group meetings with speakers from both state and federal programs. Topics included business programs and available funding, utilities programs and community facilities, including broadband, and opportunities in farming and agriculture. New York Congressman Bill Owens and Paul Tonko, both Democrats, offered their help. Owens, who has served on the House Agriculture Committee, talked about some of the newer provisions and opportunities in the recently signed Farm Bill.
We have some provisions in the Farm Bill that are for new farmers. We have a number of provisions that are related to small farmers. And we think that that's very important because as you bring back small farmers into communities, obviously that stimulates the economy, but it also gives people the opportunity to, if you will, eat local.
Owens mentioned the changing economics of agriculture in New York and talked about some programs that are available to bring new life into the farming industry.
We have a lot of CSAs up in my area. I think that's a very good option for people to have. And we're providing funding for those kinds of small farmers. We're providing funding that allows them to bring their product to farmers' markets because we're trying to encourage that kind of activity.
Congressman Tonko, whose district includes a portion of Montgomery County, says there's a need to educate the public on available opportunities. Tonko said the Mohawk Valley has many strengths.
With location, you have a lot of opportunity with the waterfront communities in Montgomery County to develop farmers markets to perhaps provide for ag diversification in each of the counties. You've got a very strong work ethic, one that's been very important to the ag industry. And if you can provide value-added measures that allow for added opportunities in product lines, there's an assistance here that comes with USDA that could perhaps be the solution you're looking for, the financial solution you're looking for.
Peter Goddery, an owner of Goddery's Tree Farm in Johnstown, said his farm is looking for ways to increase use of solar power. Goddery said that information presented will help his team develop a business plan.
So it's giving everybody some direction to go when they're looking for funding that's involved with it.
Goddery said his farm may also consider adding an extra value-added product. The USDA's Rural Roundtable Summits will continue across New York with involved agencies such as the New York Environmental Facilities Corporation, New York Rural Water Association, New York State Broadband, New York State Housing and Community Renewal, and Empire State Development.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
A federal report that found major safety lapses at Metro North Railroad has two U.S. senators looking to the railroad's new president for change. Meanwhile, a few congressional representatives say it's time to spend money on improving the nation's rail system and other infrastructure. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
The Federal Railroad Administration report called Operation Deep Dive highlights three overarching findings: an overemphasis on on-time performance to the detriment of safety, an ineffective safety department and poor safety culture, and ineffective and inadequate training. The report was spurred by four major accidents in 2013, two in May in Connecticut, a CSX freight train derailment in New York in July, and the fatal derailment in the Bronx in December. Hudson Valley Congresswoman Nita Lowey, who is the ranking Democrat on the House Appropriations Committee, required the report in a January spending bill. She says the federal government should help commuter railroads across the U.S. improve safety.
Congress must fully fund the president's request of $825 million to assist the commuter railroads to implement positive train control.
She points out that by law, railroads are expected to implement positive train control, or PTC, systems by December 2015. The U.S. Department of Transportation Secretary testified last week before Lowy and the House Appropriations Committee that many will not meet this deadline. A National Transportation Safety Board spokesman has said PTC would have prevented the Bronx derailment of a commuter train from Poughkeepsie that killed 4 passengers and injured more than 60. PTC is Wi-Fi and GPS-based safety technology that monitors and, if necessary, controls train movement in the event of human error. Democratic Congresswoman from Connecticut Elizabeth Esty echoes the importance of infrastructure investment.
We should not be waiting until trains derail, bridges collapse, and people die. We need to provide the resources. The president, as Congresswoman Lowy has already noted, has announced a bold goal on infrastructure, including on transport and on rail. We need to be supporting that.
New York Senator Charles Schumer, a Democrat, says the number of lapses cited in the report speaks to a problem with senior management at Metro North.
And the fact that we have a new head of Metro North is opportune. He can change the Metro North culture. He can turn it inside out to make sure that safety is number one. And I would say that is his job number one.
Metro North President Joseph Giulietti, who was appointed in January, says it is. During a press conference Friday in response to the FRA report, Giulietti said cultural change will take time. Democratic Senator from Connecticut Richard Blumenthal was critical about certain aspects of the FRA report.
The area that seems to me lacking in this report relates to changes in management. So far, Metro North has not indicated whether anyone has been shown the door, whether there have been any specific changes in management reflecting accountability. And I'm calling for those changes in management because people who are incompetent need to be shown the door. Incompetence has to have consequences.
Giulietti says a new vice president of engineering along with a chief transportation officer are coming on board, but he refused to look back when asked during the press conference whether any managers would be let go.
Allow me the discretion to not turn around and say that someone is going, someone is moving right now. Instead, as it progresses, I will give you the names of the people that are coming in, and you can form your own opinions on that.
Hudson Valley Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney used the FRA report to tout his Commuter Rail Passenger Safety Act, which would allow commuter rail systems to apply for loans and loan guarantees to invest in PTC systems through an FRA financing program. FRA Administrator Joseph Szabo says Metro North has already begun safety improvements and taken some corrective actions.
So it's clearly a safer railroad today than it was 3 months ago, but it's time to raise the bar to ensure that they get back to achieving the gold standard that they once so proudly held.
Maloney, a Democrat, chimes in.
I would just add that safe enough is not good enough.
Szabo says Metro North will submit plans to improve the safety department and training program to the FRA by May 17th. Blumenthal says he wants to see deadlines for implementation. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Albany College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering is positioned to merge with the SUNY Institute of Technology in Utica. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports now a new college would be created.
A draft summary of the merger plan obtained by the Utica Observer-Dispatch says the new college would be called SUNY Institute for Nanoscale Science, Engineering, and Technology, or SUNY INSET. Expectations are the merged institution's Marcy facility would provide the Mohawk Valley with the strong, technologically trained workforce it needs to attract more high-end technology companies. SUNY Chancellor Nancy Zimfer recommended the plan, saying it set a high bar for what a 21st-century entrepreneurial college campus is capable of achieving for its students, communities, the state, and the country. Back in July, SUNY's Board of Trustees began the process of separating the University at Albany and the Nano College, greenlighting the way for the chancellor to begin looking at a new structure that would include CNSE. SUNY spokesman David Doyle.
You have two institutions with similar missions that already have extensive existing partnerships, and this was a very natural evolution to bring these together to really produce what's ultimately going to be a juggernaut in high-tech, polytechnic education, job training, economic development.
The proposal went before the SUNY Board of Trustees Academic Affairs Committee Tuesday.
Many of the trustees spoke openly at this committee meeting about how innovative this plan is and why it makes sense for the SUNY system. And this resolution came out of committee with the unanimous support of the trustees. And tomorrow it will be presented to the full board for their consideration.
January 1st is target date for the merger to become effective. CNSE CEO Elaine Calieros reportedly will become chief executive of the combined institutions. There may be a bend in the road ahead. Technology advances quickly, and the industry standard for chip fab may be shifting from the model New York has bet its bankroll on. Some liken it to the 1980s contest for product dominance, where VHS tape knocked off rival higher quality Betamax to capture the home video market. Speaking on WAMC, Associate Editor of the Albany Times-Union, Mike Spain, explains why the new development on the global chip manufacturing front could pose a problem for New York's strategy to emerge as the leader of the next generation of developing microchips.
The story today by our technology writer, Larry Rulison, is telling how the world's top suppliers to computer chip companies has decided to stop developing machines for this new generation of computer chips. They would be 450 millimeters in width. Now, currently, the standard in the industry is about 12 inches or 300 millimeter wafers, and from that, all the microchips are cut. In 2011, Governor Andrew Cuomo put together a group of five of the largest chip companies to fund a pilot manufacturing line in Albany that uses the larger 400 millimeter wafers. They have committed up to $825 million over 5 years on the project. But if the major manufacturer of chip equipment is not moving in that direction, it could be problems.
A source speaking on condition of anonymity said ASML of Netherlands, the company that decided to abandon 450-millimeter chips, is not even a member of Cuomo's Global 450 consortium Spain referred to, and that there are a number of major companies with major investments pitching in to ensure the 450-millimeter chip's success. An official in the Cuomo administration told the Times-Union all five members of the G450C are pushing forward with 450-millimeter development.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1412. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.